I should never trust her. Fuck it, she's a hottie and a lover. I keep her under wraps and undercovers. Cause I can't tell nobody that we love us. Usually I'm fucking with a shawty with a little more substance than you, baby. But fuck it, you a hottie and I'm busy. Ain't no time for something else, so this will do, baby.
Welcome to The Real World on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from the unceded ancestral and traditional land of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people here on UBC Vancouver campus. My name is Dora. You just heard Immaterial by Sophie. And today is a very special and happy day because it is Pride programming. CITR has 12 straight hours of LGBT 2QIA plus related content, and I hope you're ready for it because I honestly don't know if I am, but I'm super excited. You were just like beautifully hosted by Drew, and he did a like queer music history ep showcase. Absolutely gorge. And I'm going to do kind of the same thing, only in significantly less time and honestly probably not as well, with queer cinema and queer film. So for those of you who don't know, The Real World is the UBC Film Society's radio show, where we try to connect with campus clubs and organizations through film. And I've been hosting this show for like 2 years, two, maybe 3 years now. And I mean, I've like gone through a lot of identity kind of waves, or I guess transformations almost, realizations, who knows, in that time. And it's bizarre, like kind of fun, like I feel like very lucky to be in the CITR community in this space where I'm like able to have whatever kind of identity I want. But whenever I leave that bubble, and often I do that like by consuming film because I really like movies, I'm always like, but this horrible, like this thing, how could you not know this thing? Or like, how could you not respect this thing? Or how could you not acknowledge this thing? Or how could you not represent this thing? But it's just really not something that is even thought of. So I'm going to talk a little bit about my frustrations with the film industry and specifically mainstream cinema, independent cinema, kind of as per usual, has always been more on the politically conscious side of things. But I'm hopefully going to celebrate queer films and filmmakers and just cinema that's been made in the past entire history. And also I want to celebrate Pride, and I want to celebrate the progress that's been made, and but also acknowledge that there's a lot that we still have to do. So that's what this hour is going to be. It's a bit of a frustrating episode actually for me, because when I'm talking about film, kind of as I just mentioned, it's not only is it like not up to what I would consider up to snuff in my like political views, but it historically and continues to not show very diverse expressions of queerness and queer realities. So there's a pretty large catalog of films, queer films about queerness, which is great, but that are about cis, white, wealthy masks. And that kind of gay homosexual relationship is really idolized, or not idolized, but it's definitely the most palatable, I guess you could say, of all of the beautiful multitude of queerness that exists in the world. So it gets a lot more cinematic attention than even wealthy white cis women or femmes, which is just it's very frustrating. When in the booth before Drew left, he had some what looked they seemed very lovely in the interactions I had with them, but they were talking about how great it is this year that Vancouver has so many Pride events that are happening outside of the kind of mainstream sponsored arena. So it's been a pretty big thing in LGBTQ dialogues in the past couple years that overly sponsored and like essentially tokenizing, in my opinion, Pride events are exclusive to a right off the bat people with not a lot of money, and then also are usually targeted towards this like demographic of wealthy white mask people. So this year Vancouver has been really, really great. There are a bunch of really amazing events happening. There's so many spaces for people, and that's really sick. But that's just something that's starting. It definitely is not sponsored by anything. These are independent initiatives, alternative initiatives that are making these spaces. And while that's happening in film, it's not, it's significantly less accessible to make that because the process of making films is so arduous. It's so long. It requires, you have to guarantee money. It's very expensive. And also to get into filmmaking, it usually takes a certain amount of affluence and usually whiteness and usually maskness. So it's a tough nut to crack, but steps are definitely being made, but I'm going to talk about that a little later. Just to really briefly just say the films that I watched for this episode, I watched Carell, a 1982 film by the director Michael Fassbender, Happy Together, Wong Kar-wai's 1997 film, and then, I mean, duh, if you know me, Call Me By Your Name, Luca Guadagnino's 2017 film. All of these are about mask protagonists, and while that's frustrating, I thought it was important to kind of showcase how that cinematic history has been manifested in a while in I guess like history, and I don't want it to seem like there's nothing out there for audiences with diverse identities that want to see themselves represented. There definitely is stuff. It's just significantly harder to find. And these films, I think, are well spaced. And yeah, if you disagree, you can call in, I guess. So just some history on queer cinema. I'm going to focus pretty much exclusively on new queer film. This is a term / concept that was coined by Professor Rich. She published her theory in The Village Voice in like 1993 or something. I don't know. You can Google it. But she was writing on the emergence of films that were coming out in the 1990s and early 2000s that were showing a different side of queer identity. So in the past, usually queerness was shown as A, something negative, and B, something kind of silly. And it pretty much exclusively was like mask gay people being depicted because other identities were even less acknowledged in that like social reality. But this new queer film that was coming out, it had A, queer people as protagonists, but it also had them as like flawed people. In the 90s, or in the 70s and 80s, there was a pretty big push for kind of like a clean queer patron, almost like just someone who's like, yeah, like, wow, like we're people too, but like not only are we people, but like we're fun and like hang out with us. Like this presentation of queer identity or like queer experience as something to be almost packaged for a hetero dominant society. And these new queer films that were coming out were like, heck no to that. We're flawed, we're on the fringe. Like usually quite isolated. A lot of these films, the characters were like murderers or other kinds of criminals. But the main thing that really made this media special or notable is they were challenging heteronormativity versus outraging against heteronormativity. So these films weren't made for shock value. They were made to poke holes in the assumptions and conceptions that were really prevalent at the time. So challenging ideas of what masculinity and femininity are, challenging ideas of the fluidity of sexuality, the fluidity of gender, the like essentialism of like capital. It was they were really trying to create space for these new ideas that were burgeoning in the queer community at the time as like something to like politically activate around a little more intensely, but also just challenging things that were assumed as fact and these like social constructs. And it relied pretty heavily on the idea that gender and sexuality are like social constructs and aren't something that like someone has or someone is. It's something that they perform. So yeah, really interesting stuff. There are a few different levels of film that I kind of want to talk about briefly also before getting into the films that I watched themselves. So I kind of see it as the way that representation or the way that a narrative or concept kind of comes up into dominant or like relevant cinematic discussion is it kind of starts as underground. So this would be like John Waters making movies with Divine. And these are a little more outrageous. These are like BC movies. And just like low, low budgets, people like playing around and documenting their realities and what they want to share, but for themselves. Like it's for a larger like consumer audience. Like duh, they're making it and putting it out there for people to view, but it's not like they're trying to make millions of dollars off of these movies. And then it kind of goes into independent. So that's a little bit more what I'm talking about today. Happy Together, I think, is actually a really great example of this. Also, it's like a 90s movie. So maybe I'm just conflating the two. But it's not low budget, but like relatively simple, kind of a more edgy narrative, but still like pretty like not palatable, but it's a little more inviting to and a little more accessible to external audiences. And then kind of more mainstream films. So this is also coming out more. I think that it's not an accident that these things are in chronological order. So Call Me By Your Name is definitely a mainstream film. I mean, obviously it's independent, but it made so much money. and it was like nominated for an Oscar. Like Brokeback Mountain is another example of this. Milk, even like Dallas Buyers Club. Films that are coming out with big stars, maybe not necessarily with huge budgets, but with the intention of going to a wider audience and an audience that they will assume will understand what's being represented on the screen. So that's kind of like a brief history of what I'm or the context that I'm going to be using when I'm talking about these films. Again, I'm talking about Carell, Happy Together, and Call Me By Your Name. Before I really get into that, though, I'm going to play a song, maybe two. We'll see how it goes. This is Regular Fantasies. It's Softer Than It Looks. Regular Fantasy is performing at a couple Pride events this week. I'm going to go through kind of like a list of them at the end, so don't worry. But yeah, enjoy. Thanks for tuning in to CITR 101.9 FM. Thank you.
be people watching amazing artists tell their artivism stories in dance, music, storytelling, visual art, celebrating our stunning Coast Salish land feel right to you? Vines Art Festival, August 8th to 19th, runs at parks throughout Vancouver like Trout Lake Park, Kitsilano Beach, Crab Park, Gravel Island, Roundhouse Community Center, and Strathcona Park. Watch Kim Mortal, Missy D, Immigrant Lessons, Pia Massey, and the Indigenous artists from Resilient Roots create a world you want to live in. Oh, and did I mention that it's all free? VinesArtFestival.com.
We're kicking off Pride at UBC in style with a free daytime event. On August 1st, sashay your way to the U Commons area outside the Nest from 4 p.m. onwards to celebrate diversity, inclusion, and positive space at UBC. There will be a public disco with feel-good disco and house anthems, craft beer, and a drag and dress-up trunk. There will also be live mural painting with a selection of food trucks on site with special Pride-themed menus. Come to UBC Pride on August 1st.
Hey, welcome back to The Real World on CITR 101.9 FM. You just heard Regular Fantasies, It's Softer Than It Looks. I'm your host, Dora. I'm broadcasting live from the unceded ancestral and traditional land of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people on UBC Vancouver campus. Today, CITR is celebrating Pride. Happy Pride. We have 12 straight hours of Pride programming. And it's going to be great. I'm talking about queer film history today. Before me was Drew's queer music history. And then later today, there's going to be Pride Events listing, excuse me, and piece Not Queer Enough, The Last Dyke Bar by Madeline Taylor, Puke Sword and Devours, a stunning interview by Miles Black, our music director and Devours, Coming Out Monologues, a queer Showtime dance party, unseated episode, and DJ Femme Daddy is hosting Gay Bar Bangers. So that's exciting. But I am Dora, and this is what I'm doing today. I'm talking about queer film history. So in the first part of this show, I went over some ideas of what queer film is, quilm, and the kind of problems within it as a group of films. But I'm going to talk about three films today. Carell by Michael Fassbender, Happy Together by Wong Kar-wai, and Call Me By Your Name by Luca Guadagnino. So I'm doing it in that order because that's chronological, and I think that that is not irrelevant. I also chose these films, because I really love the directors themselves, but I also think that all of them have a very, very strong, visual sense in all of their films. So there are some films that I, almost chose, like I almost did like Brokeback Mountain, I almost said Moonlight. I'm going to talk about Moonlight a little later. But I think that all three of these have, not only, like, strong visual sense, also a strong visual sense that I think is, like, pretty indicative of the time that they were released. And also, I think that they, I mean, it's obviously biased and I'm kind of skewing this, but I think that the visuals of it, the films also represent, kind of that time and the more general kind of mainstream acceptance or attitudes towards queer film when they were released. So I'm going to start with Carell. It's by Michael Fassbender. Michael Fassbender was a queer director. And this was, it's in English, but Fassbender, Fassbender lived in Berlin, and Berlin actually has a really, really rich queer history. The first queer neighborhood was there. The first like queer advocacy groups were there. And yeah, it's just like really, really amazing. If you have time, you should Google it and look it up. But Carell is about this sailor who his name is Carell, and he goes into a port, and they talk about, he like finds out about this like a brothel where in order to become a customer you have to play dice with the owner, and then if you win, then you get to like choose, I guess, one of the women there, or you sleep with the owner. So Carell goes in, his brother is there, who looks a lot like him, and essentially he goes and he loses, and he sleeps with his owner, and then kind of leaves and murders his friend. There's a lot of narratives going around, but Carell kind of like floats through all of them. I wasn't super impressed with the actor's acting ability, but Carell kind of floats through all these interactions and all these relationships as someone who people are really attracted to, really magnetic, but also quite detached and like kind of arm's length the whole time. So beyond that, like, interaction with the brothel owner, after that, so homosexuality is like kind of hinted at more, like explicitly hinted at, and before that point in the film, but then after that happens, like pretty early on, afterwards, pretty much every character, it turns out, is queer. And there's only one femme character in the film, and everyone else is quite accepting of homosexuality, honestly active, like participants in that community, and quite aggressive in it. But and while this came out like before Rich kind of describes new queer cinema starting, that whole era of it, which I said earlier was in the 1990s and early 2000s, it does touch on like pretty much all of the things that she identifies as a trademark of that kind of film. So Carell is flawed. He's a murderer. There are a huge amount of queer characters who operate and are motivated by things other than their sexuality, for the most part. They're fringe. A lot of it takes place in a brothel. Carell's a sailor, kind of like transient, untethered, not very wealthy. He's a criminal, and kind of checks all those boxes. But what I thought was interesting about this film was there's kind of like a designated space, or like a designated home base for like queerness. So there's the brothel itself, where it's like pretty well accepted, but then there's also like a couple reused sets that like are like kind of like rooftops or bars, where there are a lot of like homosexual interactions, and it's like very normal. It's like no one, like nothing happens besides that like interaction, which I thought was really cool. Comparing it to the other two films that I watched, it seems like that might be more, as a reaction or like articulation of, because it's based on a book, which I I'm like quite sure I'll Google this when I play music probably, but I'm pretty sure it was a like homoerotic novel, like a pulp, that Fassbinder turned into a film. And like in that like fantastical kind of like distanced novel experience, like when you're reading, it's kind of harder to really believe it's reality. Like it would make sense that people would enter spaces and like really publicly express themselves sexually, but not really face any consequences. But whatever, it's cool. And then a huge part of this film is masculinity. So a lot of the conversations between Carell and the like plethora of men pursuing him is about how gay sexual experiences and kind of sharing and like desire doesn't make you less of a man. Like that's like a quote, which I thought was really interesting. There's like a thing in it. So he looks a lot like his brother, and like he and his brother have this weird rivalry where they like love each other but hate each other. They like fight all the time. And I kind of saw that as, and then at the end it's like, you never had a brother, which is like, I didn't really get that a huge amount, but they are often mistaken for each other. So this, it's kind of like a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde kind of situation of heterosexual performance, because this his brother Robert, Carell and Robert, Robert is the lover of the brothel owner's wife, and this like heterosexuality, masculine performance, and then Carell is this like homosexual transient sailor, and the battling of the two and the kind of irreconciliation of the two almost, but also these performances of masculinity. So like Carell is a sailor, he's like ripped, he's always doing like very physical labor. Robert is very like slick, he wears suits all the time, he's always quite dressed up, but him as the like masculine, almost like model, I thought was really interesting and really cool. And they have that conversation, like Carell has that conversation with Mario the cop, Nono the brothel owner, like Giles the like other murderer, like everyone has this conversation. He has this conversation with so many people, and I think that that speaks really, really, I guess, like clearly to this, like the challenge of heteronormativity and the challenge of gender roles and gender performance, and that kind of uncomfortable and like problematization of it in a queer masculine experience, because there's like this want and this pressure to perform gender a certain way, and the potentiality of your sexuality kind of disrupting that, and the stress that that causes internally is like not prevalent. So it was really cool to see it. It was really, really cool. Talking about Happy Together, the Wong Kar-wai film came out in 1997. This film I freaking loved. It's about two men from Hong Kong who fall in love and go to Argentina together. And then they break up, and one of them, Lai, they ends up in Buenos Aires and is working like a bad job at a bar, kind of like with tourists and stuff. And then while he's working, and Ho Ping had dumped him, and then he sees Ho Wing, and they come and they kind of get back together. Ho Wing gets really badly beaten, and Lai takes care of him, and Ho Wing is so selfish. He lives at Lai's house, doesn't pay rent or anything, can't work, wears his clothes, takes his stuff, like, is also like a bad manipulative partner. Like, there's a bizarre, like, they clearly have a lot of affection, a lot of history for each other, but don't seem to like each other a huge amount, honestly. And they break up again. Lai kind of like floats around Buenos Aires, meets a guy named Chang, really likes him, but Chang goes away. And he kind of hangs around and sleeps with a couple other men, and then goes back to Hong Kong. And it was so good. It was so good. You should definitely watch it if you have the chance. Again, like, kind of flawed. These guys were like pretty mean to each other in a lot of ways. One of my favorite scenes, so funny because. Po Wing comes home really late and Lai's like, where have you been? And he's like, I was out getting cigarettes. And he was like out all night. And then it cuts to Lai with so many cigarettes, like huge boxes of cigarettes. And Po Wing's like, why did you get so many? And he's like, so you don't have to go out and get cigarettes and be out all night. And Po Wing's like pissed and leaves. I just thought that was like very goofy. Or not goofy, but I just really enjoyed that, I guess. But they're like, that was petty. Like, they're flawed people for sure. They are definitely on the fringe of society. They're quite poor. Lai's constantly trying to save up money to go back to Hong Kong and then kind of like having to spend it on stuff. And what I also really enjoyed about it was, like, clearly these characters were gay. It was about like their romantic and sexual relationship. They have sexual partners outside of the relationship that's like depicted. But the film is not about them being gay. The film is about how unhappy Lai is. The, like, no matter what kind of like gender like dynamic there is in your relationship, like, you can feel lonely in it, you can feel unhappy in it, you can feel manipulated, abused, like hurt. Like, it's more about the like pain of the relationship than the fact that there is a relationship. And I thought it was so absolutely stunning. The colors in this film are also really beautiful. I wish I had more time. I want to talk about the color so badly. But also this idea of masculinity it's not as explicitly discussed as Carell for sure, but it is definitely brought up. He's like, Lai is quite conscious of his gender performance and what it means, like all his actions kind of all the time, and hiding his sexuality as well. But he's still like a very masculine character and is like recognized and treated as a masculine character, which is really, 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 really cool. I would recommend it. 100p. And then finally, really briefly, I'm going to talk about Call Me By Your Name. There's going to be a whole hour on it after, so I'm not going to talk about it for a huge amount of time. But I just want to talk about the difference in the fringe identity or like fringe placement of the characters. So yes, Oliver and Elio are fringe characters, I guess. They're definitely the whitest and most affluent of all three of these movies, but they're fringe because they're isolated. And I talk about this more in the hour that's coming up, but they're completely removed, and that kind of like allows them to have this like utopic romance bubble that's really separate and protected from the entire world. But they're not poor, they're not people of color, they're not like, there's nothing that really makes them unacceptable to the rest of society. They're like educated, but they're just protected, which is really bizarre. And I kind of think of it as like moving away from this like new queer cinema to like almost new queer cinema, because it has those same elements but morphed or like rearticulated and re-pieced into this, the like contemporary cultural attitudes towards queerness, where it's not, kind of similar to Happy Together, it's not like exceptional that they are queer. Like, it's more that like, but they're also not hiding it, whereas Lie did protect that really seriously. So that's what I think about those three films. I am going to talk really quickly, though, about how visually diverse these are. So Cruella's, like, pretty ruddy. I think it was definitely shot on film, and it's really highly saturated, and there's a lot of, like, sparkle, like, almost lens flare, but not lens flare. And then Happy Together is like more monotone. It is also saturated. It's more like reds are really, really bold in it, and the use of red as like a color, it switches between black and white and stuff. Really, really good. But they like shots have, whereas Fassbinder's film is kind of darker, there are a lot of colors all the time, whereas Wong Kar-wai's film is more monotone. If there's a scene that's like, if yellow, the entire kind of screen is yellow. And then Call Me By Your Name is also quite colorful, but it's very clear, it's very bright, it's really crisp, which might speak to the technology that was available, but also like, I think that it again kind of like represents this like same kind of deal of like saturation, and like there are only like three, like everything's either blue, green, red, or yellow in Call Me By Your Name, so like using specific colors and focusing on them but very cleanly. Again, this like kind of new cinema wave. So I'm just going to play a couple ads and PSAs and a song very quickly. This is Doodle Number One Issa by Kim Wardle. Actually, you know what? No, I don't want to play that song. I want to play I'm Blue by Kim Wardle. And then we'll be right back and we're going to finish up. Thanks for tuning in.
Myself number one. Now I'm roasting under blazing sun, riding shotgun. You at the wheel, my free will at your direction. Memorize your signs, but forgot my own reflection. All my eggs in my basket, I gave them all to you. Still hungry after fables, but I ran out of spoons. Give her more than I can give, overextending my wings. Good at playing your games, but this is not a win-win. I've been sinking in your dirty dishes, even when my plate's full. I marry myself, I remain faithful. One day I'll leave the table, cause you stop serving love. Crave the taste of solitude, I know it is enough. I'm blue, the color of my solitude. Love me over you. I've lost count of how
How many times I knew my yes was a no? I'm your clown out of habit, there is dust on my throne. For you, I drop my shit just to hear you say hero. Fly you to your dreams, distract me from my own. Maybe, baby, someday I will learn to be alone. I fly myself up to the moon and build a gate around my zone. I bust a myth that I am selfish when I take care of myself. Repeat it till I hear it, reverse the trauma in my cells. Blue. Color of my solitude. I'm blue. I'ma choose to love me over you. I'ma choose to love me over you. Over you. You are not a burden, baby. You are on purpose, baby. You are not a burden, baby.
Were you directly affected by the LGBT purge in the Canadian Armed Forces, RCMP, or Federal Public Service? If so, a legal settlement may affect your rights. You may be eligible to receive compensation of $5,000 to $50,000 or more in cases of exceptional harm, as well as other non-financial benefits, or you may choose to opt out of the settlement. Information about the settlement, deadlines, your rights, and the claims process is available at LGBTPurgeSettlement.com. That's LGBTPurgeSettlement.com.
What does it mean to be at a disco party? BB's Disco. BB's Disco Party. What does it mean to be at a disco party? BB's. BB's Disco Party. What does it mean to be? What does it mean to be?
Tune in every Tuesday at 3 p.m. to hear music from the current issue of Disorder Magazine, that sassy magazine from CITR 101.9 FM, hosted by me, BB, editor-in-chief of Disorder.
Hey, welcome back to this special episode of The Real World on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from the unceded ancestral and traditional land of the Hencominum-speaking Musqueam people here on UBC Vancouver campus. You just heard I'm Blue by Kim Mortal. She has been performing at Pride events all across Vancouver for the past couple weeks, so keep an eye out for her. This special episode is all about queer film and like new queer film. And I've talked mainly about films depicting cis, mostly white, masculine homosexual couples. But I kind of want to turn an eye to the future a little more. And almost what we have in store. And then immediately following me is me again. I have like a whole hour on Call Me By Your Name, which is why I spoke so briefly on it just now. So I am like of the opinion that television is the future. Don't at me if you don't agree. And a lot of that is because that's where a huge amount of queer identity is being represented. It's more accessible, especially with like things like Hulu and Netflix and stuff like that, Crave. And it allows audiences to kind of get an experience of queerness that isn't really allowed for them in cinema. So the main thing that I'm thinking of is BoJack Horseman. That show is really great for a lot of reasons, but one thing that it does that I thought was really, really cool is one of the characters comes out as asexual, which is, in my opinion, the completely least represented sexuality in the entire spectrum. it's like often disregarded as like not even existing, like more so than like even within the queer community, which is cool. But both, I think the fact that it's an animated show and that it's a show or a television show, give it this freedom to, present this alternative queer, identity, queer expression. There is a big thing in television right now of like queer characters being killed off immediately, which is kind of freaky. There's a good Vox video on it if you want to look it up. But also I don't know if any of you guys saw it, but the film Love, Simon. I didn't see it, which I feel kind of bad about, but it's, I think, the first big budget mainstream queer film to come out ever. It wasn't an independent film first. It was released like massively, and it's more of like a, like it's like a Hollywood movie with the whole narrative beginning, middle, end. Like, it's not a film, it's a movie, you know, and which sounds kind of snotty, but it's the first one, I think, which is really, really great, and why it was so important to go see it and pay for a ticket, because they're not going to make movies like this until they know that they can make money off it, which is cool. It does really fit into this like palatable queerness of white, affluent, handsome, masculine, thin. But it's like, I mean, it's all a step, you know, and like Queer Eye. It's really great that there's a Muslim character, really great that there's Muslims host and a black host, and like different forms of homosexual like expression in it. But it's still like wealthy dudes. But the more queer content that comes out, the better. And it's not hopeless, for sure. Moonlight won Best Picture 2 years ago. Beautiful film about diverse, like, homosexual identity and masculinity. Tangerine, another, like, really, really beautiful movie about sex work, about trans women, about poor women. There are films that are coming out that are fighting this dominant white affluent narrative and depicting and sharing stories, kind of like Paris is Burning did, that aren't typically allowed into those kind of spaces, which is really, really great. I've run completely out of time. I was not expecting this. I have a whole bunch of prize suggestions that I'll put when I podcast it. I asked people for movies to watch, and they gave me some. So I'll put those up and their little explanations why. Thank you so much for tuning in. Now you get to enjoy my voice for yet another hour. Talking about Call Me By Your Name, in a love letter to Call Me By Your Name. So thank you for tuning in, and have a really, really lovely day, I hope. Happy Pride.
Dear